Good afternoon and welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast. Our guest today is Dr. David Agus, author of The End of Illness by Free Press. Dr. Agus is professor of medicine and engineering at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California and the USC Viterbi School of Engineering. He also heads the USC Norris Westside Cancer Center and the Center for Applied and Molecular Medicine. He is the co-founder of two leading personalized medicine companies, Navigenics and Applied Proteomics. Dr. Agus, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This is a really interesting book. It just came out. There was a serial excerpt I saw in the Wall Street Journal that caught my attention. I think this book is very interesting, particularly in the time that we live, increasing focus on personalized medicine. I think you are writing here to help people develop a personalized approach to lifelong health. Could you review some of the core strategies that you talk about in the book and the difference between your approach, which I think is about maintaining health for the lifelong process, and then the health system we have today, which is more about diagnosing illness?
Sure. I mean, really, first, where I'm coming from. I'm a cancer doc, and so I see patients, you know, with advanced metastatic cancer, and I know most of them, if not all of them, I can't cure. I can only keep the disease at bay for a period. And so why I wrote this is I really need to go back to the beginning. We need to focus on prevention, and we can do that. But to me, the body is a complex system. We can't look at one disease or one organ like we have been doing. We've been treating complex diseases like heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, like infectious disease, and they're not. So infectious disease, you make that diagnosis, you know the treatment. The antibiotic doesn't care whether you're short, fat, round, tall, green, or white. The antibiotic works and kills the bacteria. The problem is other diseases, human diseases, are the interaction. They're from within, not from without, the interaction of the body with its host. And that complex system is much more difficult to target and is much more difficult to control, but at the same time, we can prevent, through the data we have and the interventions that we know work, most diseases.
And I think that's a real fascinating way of framing the system because for the most part, if you're infected with a germ, a virus, or a bacteria, the biology of the bug is the same, at least for the purposes of the antibiotic, whatever treatment you're giving or the vaccine. But as you point out, there's a lot of variation despite the fact that we share 99.9% of our DNA. There's still enormous variation among human patients. One of the ways I think we've been trying to get medicine to move from this one-size-fits-all approach or this idea that, you know, we're going to have a magic bullet of a single a drug that, as you write about, was just going to tackle anything that we come up against is the idea of biomarkers, developing targeted therapies. As a cancer researcher, you've seen some of these targeted therapies come online. Could you explain what the biomarkers are and maybe how we can work with or monitor some more common biomarkers like the ones you talk about, C-reactive protein, to monitor our own health?
You know, if you want to do a clinical trial, you need to give a drug to a patient, give another patient a different intervention, potentially a placebo, and then wait till the outcome happens. Sometimes that could be years or decades, and obviously tremendously costly. At the same time, patients aren't going to benefit for many years. A biomarker is a way of looking for a surrogate, looking for something else that correlates to the outcome. And so, for example, you mentioned C-reactive protein. So C-reactive protein is right now one of the best markers we have as a surrogate for inflammation throughout the body. And what we know is inflammation yields heart disease, cancer, et cetera. So if you can lower C-reactive protein, the hope is you can then delay heart disease and cancer. And some data with some of the drugs certainly point that direction. But the other area that's key is I all the time see patients with advanced cancer, and I use these new molecularly targeted therapies, the ones that you read about in the paper that cost $100,000 for a year. And the problem I have is that a patient comes in, their cancer is 2 centimeters. I give them the drug, they come back 2 months later, and it's 3 centimeters. Would the cancer have been 10 centimeters had I not given them the drug? So all we know in our business is things that can shrink a cancer. Well, remember, if I shrink a cancer 50%, it's not even an order of magnitude. Where if I slow its growth, I can have a much more profound effect on survival many times. Yet I have no way of knowing whether the individual patient is benefiting from the drug. These were FDA approved because versus placebo, they make people live longer. But how it affects the individual patient, most of the time, I don't even know.
And how do we, you know, develop more of the tools? You talk a lot in the book about you know, understanding the differences between what the research is telling us at this very high level, for instance, for vitamin D, and then you burrow down to the research and you say, well, you know, these are observational studies. They don't tell us a lot about your individual health. You need to read carefully. So what is the future of personalized medicine? You talked about this, you know, the breakdown between, as you say, in as your role as a cancer researcher, a cancer physician, between what these randomized trials can tell us and the vision of health that we're trying to get to one person at a time. Are these approaches converging through sciences like proteomics? What do we think that the future is going to look like in terms of bridging the gap between research and individual health?
I think technology is our big hope. I think we have DNA today. It's a mature science. I think the next step will be things like proteomics, microbiomics, and metabolomics, all of which are new evolving sciences. But they changed already some of the things we do in medicine. In 1976, if your wife thought she was pregnant, she took a tube of blood, the doctor injected it into a rabbit, and we sacrificed the rabbit 5 days later at every major hospital in the country. And if the ovaries of that rabbit were enlarged, she was pregnant. That was the state of the art. 1977, Warner Chilcutt comes out with a $10 pregnancy test, a single protein they can look at and say whether a woman is pregnant or not, a binary function answer, yes, no. And it transformed everything. Well, now we have the technology of not just looking at one protein, but we can look at the whole proteome, all the proteins in the blood, and start to correlate the outcome. So instead of, you know, I'm a believer in the book, I talk about statins and aspirin as preventive medicines, and I believe in them. At the same time, it hurts me to give them to everybody because not everybody needs them. But going forward, we're going to be able to individualize, first at the DNA level, and then at the protein level, and then the others will come thereafter. Because remember, if you're in front of two Chinese restaurants and you look at the ingredient list, they're exactly the same. You taste the food, one could be great and one can be horrible. And so DNA is your ingredient list. Proteins are what's going on that moment in time. They're both key to understanding the picture, and over time we're going to get more dimensionalities as we look at the microbiome, the bacteria in your GI tract, as we look at your metabolite products. All of those are going to give us new dimensionalities over time.
So in a sense, you're saying what we're going to be able to do, and you talk about this again, monitor health more continuously over a duration and then tweak the system, because you say it's a system, and we may never be able to entirely understand that system down to its smallest minutia, but understand, well, what role does inflammation play in disease? How can we balance the system over time to get these trade-offs that keep health going? And these will be the tools that we'll use to do that.
You know, to me, diseases are verbs. You're cancering. You're heart diseasing. You don't have cancer. And so being able to start to look at the system that is you with a disease, and then you're right, make a change and then iterate, make a change another direction and another direction, instead of just throw something in and down the road see if you live longer. Because I truly believe if we start to intervene early, we can make a difference. Healthcare in the United States is 16.5% of gross domestic product. All we're hearing about from the candidates in Washington is healthcare finance reform. We don't have a healthcare finance problem. We have a healthcare problem. We're the number one spender in the world, yet ranked 32nd. Again, a healthcare problem. And the way we can affect health more than anything is start to push on the prevention side and start to push on the technology side. Because prevention is going to help today, and technology will help tomorrow.
One final thought. Is something of what you're advocating, in some sense, I know we'll never get maybe this 100%, is erasing the line between, well, saying, okay, here's the clinical research over here, and here's what we're doing in doctor's office over here, but using technology to build that base in the doctor's office in real time. Is that a little closer to what you're thinking?
Exactly. Is that, you know, our country's so good at reporting the negatives. If I have a side effect from a drug, I got to tell the FDA tomorrow, but I never report the positive. When you go to Google and you search some terms, your search tomorrow is better than it was today. It learned based on where you chose what, and it put a hierarchy to things. When you go to see me a month from now, I'm the same as I am today. I want to learn from every encounter. I want doctors and patients to be able to contribute all of the data so that we can iteratively get better every time we see a patient, and the patients become part of their own cures. I think it's here today. I think we have the technology to do it. We need things and simple steps like common data elements. We don't have common languages. You call it a broken leg, I call it a fractured leg. Once we get those common data elements and electronic records, you're going to see a takeoff in how we learn about what we do in medicine.
That's a terrific vision. More of what Google or Microsoft do with their products every day, creating algorithms for studying the performance of those products and then tweaking them on the fly. A tremendous vision for the future of medicine. The End of Illness from Free Press, available on Amazon.com. Dr. David Agus, thank you very much for joining us today.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.